I'm pleased to welcome Dan Atfield from Affinity Wills. Welcome, Dan.
Thank you, Bob, and good morning. Afternoon. Good afternoon.
Just about.
And
only
thank
just.
You.
Yeah. Oh, no, you're welcome. Now, last time you were here, you talked us through some aspects of will and lifetime trusts, and it quickly became clear that there are potentially a lot of different options which are applicable depending on individual circumstances. If there's one thing we've really picked up since we started this series, it's that the guys at Affinity Wills really know their stuff. So rather than try to cover everything today, we're going to briefly look at just a few of those different aspects. But if you have any particular issues, your best option is to call the guys at Affinity, who will gladly arrange for you to come and have a chat and provide you with options best suited for your personal circumstances. And we'll be giving out Affinity Will's phone number a little later in the show. Okay, Dan, so going on from what you outlined a couple of weeks ago, let's just take a quick look at some different kinds of trusts and who they might be best suited for.
Yes, that's right, Bob. There are several different types of trust designed to meet many different needs, and the type of trust you might use will depend on a number of factors.
Right.
That'll include things like who the beneficiaries are, what the assets are that are going to be held in the trust, how and when you want those assets to be distributed.
Right.
And also what your objectives are, what you want to achieve by setting up the trust. So if you like, we can take a look at some of the main types of trusts that we put in wills.
There's quite a few different ones, I believe, aren't there? Yeah.
Well, there are. So if I run through just some of the ones, and in no particular order, I can kick off by picking something like a fixed trust. And a fixed trust is one in which the beneficiaries are named and the proportions for how much to pay to each one are clearly stated.
Okay, yeah.
Then you've got something called a discretionary trust. And a discretionary trust is one in which the beneficiaries are named, but the trustees have the power, very flexible power, to decide how much to give to each beneficiary. And that might vary according to their independent circumstances.
Okay, yeah.
These types of trusts can be used for disabled or other vulnerable beneficiaries, or for things like inheritance tax planning.
Right.
They're also used for protecting assets against remarriage after death, things like long-term care, perhaps insolvency. And the capital and the income in these trusts is under the full control and at the discretion of the trustees. Usually these trusts nominate a wide class of beneficiary. The beneficiaries can either be named or they can be referred to by class. And basically, Bob, a class of beneficiary is my children or my descendants or my grandchildren. They're each considered to be classes of beneficiaries.
Okay. So, I mean, compared to fixed trust, which are probably the most simple and sort of laid out trusts, this gives a lot more flexibility to the trustees to distribute what remains amongst the beneficiaries, yeah?
That's absolutely correct. And, you know, the more flexible a trust, in my view, the better.
Yep.
You know, with these trusts, the more beneficiaries you have nominated, the merrier. It adds strength to the integrity of the trust. And usually what the person setting up the trust or drafting the will do is give guidance to the trustees via a letter of wishes, which is drafted while they're still alive.
Right.
And that letter of wishes will basically tell the trustees exactly what the objectives are of the trust and how they would like the income or capital to be distributed for that trust period.
Okay. Is there any sort of check back or control that the trustees have done what the deceased wished?
Well, trustees are under a legal duty to carry out the deceased's wishes. You know, the Trustee Act will keep a tight control over them and ensure that they act in the best interests of the trustees.
So presumably, if there's any dispute, you've got recourse in law as a beneficiary if you feel you've been dealt with unfairly, I guess.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely, yeah.
Okay.
Yes. Another trust less commonly used is a trust for disabled beneficiaries. These are basically a discretionary trust, but they enjoy special tax privileges for beneficiaries who are disabled.
Right.
Now, what this says on the tin is a disabled beneficiary trust, and a beneficiary needs to be qualifying, and the qualification basically is laid down by statute, to enjoy the special tax privileges, these trusts need to allocate at not less than half of any income that's generated in the trust for that particular disabled beneficiary, and not less than half of the capital. If you don't comply with those conditions, then it won't qualify for the special tax treatment. And there is a notable disadvantage to this particular type of trust, because the disabled person would probably have their means-tested benefits disqualified,
right,
as a result of being a beneficiary of this type of trust. So it's a bit of a trade-off, really. If you want the tax advantages, you lose the benefits.
Right, okay.
If you want to retain the benefits, you use a different type of trust, but you lose the tax advantages.
It's a complicated business, this, isn't it? And it's something that people need to take advice on, I think. Just a reminder that you're listening to 123, which is being brought to you in association with Affinity Wills on Phoenix FM. Right now I'm talking with Dan Atfield from Affinity. And just before the break, we'd started to look at some of the trusts you might want to think about using, but there are lots more, aren't there, Dan?
Yes, indeed, Bob. Moving on from what we've already covered, let's just talk briefly about interest in possession trusts.
Okay.
This is in which the beneficiary, and that could be something like a surviving spouse, can use the asset while they're alive, but the asset must pass to another named beneficiary or beneficiaries, such as children, when that surviving spouse eventually dies.
Right.
And that type of trust is sometimes used to ensure that one's spouse is adequately provided for while keeping the estate intact to pass on to one's children. Now, expanding on this by way of an example, let's say this is a very common type of trust, this one, probably the most commonly used in wills.
Okay.
And you might have a situation, for instance, where I might own the property and I'm in a second relationship, and I might have two children, and my new wife or my new partner has children of her own.
Okay.
But I want to make sure that if I'm the first to die, that my children eventually will benefit,
sure,
from that property. And so I can direct that under the terms of my will, that house passes into a trust. My wife, my new wife, would have the right of occupation, subject to paying the bills and insuring the property and, yep, maintaining it for the rest of her days.
Yep.
But not necessarily having access to the capital value. What that means is when she eventually dies, that property is ring-fenced for the eventual benefit of my children.
Okay, yeah.
And that example that I've given has used the example of a whole property. But, of course, if a property is owned jointly by two people and they each own 50%, they can each put the same structure, the trust structure, within their wills to protect their respective half share.
Okay.
Eventually.
Now,
for the,
what you've actually quoted there is almost exactly my circumstances. I have two children. My lady friend has three children. We are looking at, in the near future, moving in together, selling both our houses and buying one.
Right.
And it gets complicated, doesn't it? But, you know, that would cover us, would it, if we...
Yeah, you'd be buying the new property typically as what we call tenants in common.
Okay.
That's in separate shares. It can be 50% each, or it can be unequal shares. And then your respective wills will place your respective share,
yep,
on first death into a trust, would allow the survivor to remain in occupation in that property either for a defined period or for their lifetime. It's more commonly for their lifetime. And when they eventually die, irrespective of what they subsequently do with their share,
right,
because that is up to them what they do with their share,
okay,
the share of the first to die it will be protected for the children against eventualities such as another marriage,
okay,
after
right,
you die,
yep,
or if the survivor were to need some form of long-term care.
Very interesting. Right, a few months' time, I'll have to make an appointment with you, I think.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's interest in possessions trusts, yeah?
Yes. Protective trusts, they are usually used where the beneficiaries are either bankrupt or likely to become so. It means that they can receive income from the trust, but the capital remains protected. Not so common as the interest in possession trusts. We used to use a trust quite a lot. It was called a nil rate band discretionary trust. They do still exist. They used to be used prior to October 2007 for married couples who wanted to be sure that they could get two nil rate band tax allowances. That's the inheritance tax-free threshold of £325,000,
okay,
that we currently have. And prior to 2007, it was the only way through the wills that a married couple could add together two nil rate bands. And these still work very effectively for unmarried couples where the overall estate value combined with the two people is likely to exceed $325,000, then this type of trust will ensure that an unmarried couple can enjoy two nil rate bands added together up to £650,000. There are a lot of people around who will, married couples, who will still have a nil rate band discretionary trust in their wills. And we're often asked, should they change that or should they remain as they are?
Right.
And as a general rule of thumb, I would say that if their total estate value as a married couple is presently under £650,000, then it's perfectly okay to keep the wills as they are.
Okay.
However, if their combined estate is likely to exceed £650,000 as a married couple, it would be prudent to review those wills because there can be very distinct tax disadvantages,
okay,
to those wills if the nil rate band rises in the future.
Okay. All right. Well, it's getting complicated, isn't it? Yeah, we're getting into areas where it's difficult to keep up with it, really, isn't it? Because there's so many variables. That's the point, I suppose.
There are lots of variables, yeah, but it underlines the importance of sitting down with a professional.
Absolutely.
Who can give you guidance based on your individual circumstances.
Okay.
Complicated to you, Bob,
yep,
is not necessarily complicated to a professional estate planner.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Only because they deal with it every day of the week.
Know it inside out, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Now, what about statutory trusts?
Well, statutory trusts, you're talking about things like a bereaved minors trust. That is where, at the point somebody dies, the children or one or more of the children is under 18. The assets go into the trust and under the control of the trustees. And the trustees have discretion over the capital and the income for the maintenance and education of those children. And the capital is eventually released to them when they reach the age of 18. There's also what we call an 18 to 25 trust. And an 18 to 25 trust is, as the name implies, it's where, let's say parents don't think the children are going to be mature enough to receive the capital at 18.
Right, right.
And this is extremely common, of course.
Yeah.
where a parent thinks that they might want the money to stay in trust, the capital certainly to stay in trust until the children are a little older,
sure,
a little more or less likely to blow it on fast cars.
Seems reasonable to me, yeah.
And so what you can do is you can specify an older age, anything between 18 and 25, and the assets are still controlled by the trustees, except for when the children are 18, over 18, they have an automatic right to receive any income from the trust. And so the trustee's discretion extends to the capital. Now, the nice thing about an 18 to 25 trust is that if you specify the age of 25, the trustees can accelerate the payments of capital to those children if they feel they are mature enough to receive it.
Okay.
What is more difficult is if you set a lower age of, let's say, 18 or 21, and upon reaching that age, the trustees don't consider that the children should receive a large sum.
Right, yeah.
It's difficult to extend.
It becomes contestable, I suppose. Yeah.
Well, contestable, yeah, and they would need to go back to court to get it extended. Much more difficult.
Sure. Okay, Dan. Well, thank you very much. We'll take another little break, but we'll be back soon with Dan Atfield from Affinity Wills. A few minutes.
123 is brought to you in association with Affinity Wills, future planning for your benefit. Visit our website at affinitywills.co.uk.
Oh, great stuff. That's Sandy Tom and This Old World. And my guest, Dan Atfield, was rocking along to that one. You quite enjoyed that, didn't you, Dan?
I did indeed.
You like a bit of blues. It's Dan Atfield from Affinity Wills, and he's talking to us about some of the varied trusts that you might want to think about when making your will. So we've heard about a lot of different trusts, Dan. Are there more?
I can't stop my foot tapping after that last track.
Good.
Yes, Bob. The next one I've got on my list is kind of very similar to the interest in possession trust that we've talked about. It's called a life interest trust. It can be used in the wills of singles or couples. Again, they are fixed trusts which define one or more life tenants. That's the person or persons who will be the occupant of the life tenant of that trust. And if the trust holds property, the life tenant will enjoy usually rent-free occupation either of that property or the part of the property that is sort of held by the trust. You remember we talked about the tenants in common, you owning a share of the property each,
right,
in your example.
Right.
What the trust will then go on to state is where that property passes on the death of the life tenant or the life tenants.
Okay.
Now, we've been talking about property held in this type of trust, but of course, some people have cash as well. There can be savings and investments and shares and things, and it's perfectly okay for cash to pass into a life interest trust as well. And in that situation, usually what would happen is the life tenant would be able to receive the income that's generated from that cash, but not necessarily have access to the capital. When we're referring to property, I don't want people to think that when you're putting a property or a share of a property into trust, it's limited to the current property that you're living in. There is a way that you can word the trust so that it can carry forward to another property that you may move to in your lifetime. And of course, when someone dies, the life tenant may, of course, want to move property.
Right.
They may wish to downsize or upsize.
Probably happens quite often, I would think.
Very much so. That can all be built into the trust as specific terms and conditions, if you like. It can allow the life tenant to sell the property, to use the cash to buy another property, and the terms of the original trust carry forward to that subsequent property, but you still enjoy the ongoing protection.
Right.
All right.
Okay. Yep.
Now, there's a right to occupy. A right to occupy is usually it's quite similar to a life interest trust, but it tends to define the term. So rather than use the term the life tenant can live in it for the rest of their days, you would say that the occupant can live in the property for a defined period.
Okay.
So, for example, you might have a child who's living at home, a grown-up child. You might want to give him a little bit of breathing space after you pass away, and you might want to give him the opportunity to live in the property rent-free for a couple of years, 3 years.
Gotcha, yeah.
Just so he's
yeah.
got an opportunity to get his act together yeah, and yeah. get his own property.
Yeah.
So that's a right to occupy for a period of time. Both life interest trusts and right to occupy trusts can be set up to be determined or to end if the occupant or the life tenant stops using the property as a permanent residence. A good example of that might be if the life tenant in the future needs some form of long-term care. It could be, and this is a contentious point, you could, for instance, say that if the life tenant, after you're dead, remarries or cohabits, then the trust ends and it right. passes down to the eventual beneficiaries. I personally think that's a little harsh.
Yep, yep. Depends on the individual, though, yeah.
It does depend on the individual.
Yeah.
You know, the idea of these trusts usually is to protect the asset for the eventual beneficiary, not to make the life of the life tenant a misery in right. the meantime.
Right, yes, sure.
So that's largely a matter of opinion. You can also build in conditions, as I've already mentioned, such as maintaining the property, insuring the property, and paying all the outgoings. So notwithstanding you're living rent-free, you've still got to pay the bills.
Right, yeah.
Which I think is fair.
Right. Oh, absolutely. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I can't tell you how it surprised me how many variables there are that have to be planned for in advance. You know, it's something I think probably making a will is something we all put off, I guess, and you try not to think about it. But when you do actually look at it, it's something that's so important that needs doing properly, isn't it?
It is. And the key point that you've already made is there's no one size fits all with this.
No.
It really is a case of establishing what the needs are, establishing what the objectives are, and using the standard, because largely they are standard precedents. That you know, we're not reinventing the wheel, we're just really using standard precedents but tailoring them to suit an individual's needs.
Right. Okay, well, as we said at the outset, there are so many variables available, and in a program like this, we can about scratch the surface, I beg your pardon. So my advice to you is to pick up the phone and call the guys at Affinity, who'll be delighted to give you a free consultation in your own home, where you'll be able to talk through your particular circumstances and sort something out which is tailor-made to your requirements. The number to ring is 01245 85000. Well, thanks so much, Dan. When will we be seeing you back on Phoenix again, and what will you be talking about then?
Well, we're scheduled to come back in 2 weeks.
Right.
That session will be, I'll be here with my colleague Nick Goldberg,
okay.
who
yeah.
the listeners have heard quite a lot from already.
Right.
And we thought we'd swing the needle a little bit next time, Bob,
okay.
And move away from trusts in wills and expand on the quite detailed topic of setting a trust up in your lifetime.
Okay, well, thank you so much for coming in today. I found it absolutely fascinating, and I look forward to you coming back in a couple of weeks' time then. Thanks, Dan.
Thank you, Bob.
123 is brought to you in association with Affinity Wills, future planning for your benefit. Visit our website at affinitywills.co.uk.